Hi everyone, welcome to Channel 9. Today we are talking about Patterns and Practices Enterprise Library. I've got Grigory Melnick and Chris Tavares from the Enterprise Library team in Patterns and Practices. And my name is Ajay Krishnamurthy. I work in PNP as a lead product planner, looking after all the planning and so on. So Grigory, why don't you start off by introducing yourself and tell us what you do at PNP?
All right. Well, I am the product owner for Enterprise Library and also the program manager. So basically my job is to make sure whatever we deliver meets the best of customer expectations. So
sounds like a fun job.
Oh yeah.
Chris?
And Chris is my calling kid.
Yes, I'm the development lead on the Enterprise Library project. My job is to own the code that we ship and make sure that it fits the technical requirements that he is so kindly supplying to me.
All right, so you guys are partners in crime then.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
All right, super. So without further ado, let's talk about Enterprise Library. What's going on with this Enterprise Library 5? I know you guys are excited about this in the team room. Tell us a little bit about EL5, Grigory.
So EL5 has this kind of overarching theme that we call the simplicity for the win. And what we mean by that is that over the years, as the Enterprise Library grew, and the new application blocks, new components, new providers were added, arguably it became more and more complex, and now there's just a lot of stuff in there. And this is...
And that's a technical term for something, right? A lot of stuff.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Another term would be cruft.
Cruft.
There we go.
Stuff or cruft.
We have a user story called Removing Historical Cruft.
Nice.
In any case. So basically, we've decided to approach this release extremely intentionally with regard to making the overall user experience simpler. And that's from several dimensions. So the key three dimensions that we're tackling are from the perspective of architectural refactoring, then the config experience and the config tool, and then the third one is the learnability. So in terms of the architectural refactoring, I think there would be nobody better to discuss the dev lead. Chris, why don't you do that?
So for anybody who's looked at the internals of Enterprise Library, it's a bit of an effort to get your head around it. So the first thing we wanted to do is go in and try and make things simpler, particularly around the way that Enterprise Library objects are constructed. So right now, not anymore since we've done ripping it out now.
In 4.1.
In 4.1 and previous versions, Entlib was built around a underlying system called Object Builder. And the way that we built up objects, so when you wanted something like a log writer in a logging block. So you had the log writer. Okay, well, this needed a set of trace listeners, which needed a trace source and an instrumentation provider and a whole bunch of other stuff. And we need to wire all this stuff up. So the way each one of these worked is typically there was something called a custom factory, which was implemented an interface that when Object Builder was asked to build up a log writer, it would look for an attribute, a custom factory attribute, which pointed at one of these things. So it newed that up. Oftentimes, this was actually a subclass called the assembler-based custom factory, so you also needed an assembler, which was an object which actually did the necessary stuff to build up this guy, the log writer in this case. But the log writer still needed its trace listeners, so the assembler would go off and call back into Object Builder to get a bunch of trace listeners and go back to and repeat ad nauseum. In addition, we also needed to do a bunch of things like lifetime management. And I don't remember specifically if trace listeners were one of them, but let's assume for the purpose of this conversation that it was. We would need to hold on to the trace listeners, so there was a separate set of caches for these objects that had been created in the past. This all was necessary infrastructure in the early versions of Enterprise Library. However, in the current world, especially with the ideas of dependency injection and dependency injection containers becoming more and more mainstream, and the fact that we actually have an explicit one, Unity, now, a lot of this work is now can be performed by a dependency injection container. So what we have done is we've replaced all of this infrastructure So we do not need to write these extra boilerplate classes for every single object in Enterprise Library anymore. So these are all gone. So what we've done is, for those who are worried that we're only going, you're still only going to be specific to the Unity DI container, we've actually abstracted our object graph setup so that it can be used against different DI containers.
So they can just rip and replace if you have Unity. Right.
Something like Spring.net.
Spring.net. We've done prototypes with a couple different containers.
Nice.
We've touched Spring, AutoFac.
Yeah.
You basically, the one person needs to write a container configurator.
Nice.
And then down inside the configuration classes for each of the blocks, we build up a series of what are called type registrations. Now, the net result of this is, well, if you're using the existing Antlib APIs, basically no change. Mm. You continue calling logger.write or databasefactory.createDatabase, but under the hood, we're now using the container to resolve all of those objects.
Gotcha.
We are also able to take away all those interim caches that we were dealing with.
Right.
Because the container takes care of lifetime management for us.
Right.
And then because of this loosely coupled design that the DI allows us to do, right, mm-hmm. we're essentially achieving a greater maintainability for the future releases as we move forward.
Exactly. I mean, one of the biggest advantages of this for us as the Antlib team is the fact that it's much easier to bring new people on. Because there are much fewer moving parts that people have to learn.
Right. So if our customers have an existing application using 4.1, and then EL5 comes out with this new architecture, I don't have to actually, if I'm just switching from EL 4.1 to 5.0, I don't have to re-gut the application itself. If I'm calling these standard APIs, I'm good to go with the business.
So there are a few spots where we may have changed the public API a little bit. And they will most likely need to recompile, but that should be it.
Right, and you'll have them documented and called out, right? It won't be secrets.
Most people would not see any breaking changes. Only those people who are essentially writing the extensions and new providers that they would need to know about all the underlying changes. But one of the objectives for Antlib is as we move forward to be very conscious about any breaking changes, and we are very careful about doing that.
Gotcha. Perfect. Sounds good. So, Grigori, one of the other topics that we've heard a lot of feedback is around the configuration aspect of Enterprise Library. I know there's some exciting work going on. Why don't you tell us about what you're doing on the config tool space, if you will.
So configuration is the other bucket where user experience have been particularly, challenging, let's put it this way. Now, again, I do not want to say that the config experience that we're offering now is bad. Because it's actually better than in some other cases, and nobody wants to modify their config via XML, right?
Of course,
XML is not a programming language.
Yep.
What's that saying?
One of the fellow devs at PMP registered the domain name XML is not a programming language. damn it.com.
So the fact that we already have a tool already makes it way simpler, and I don't know whether it's significantly simpler, but definitely simpler to go ahead and make your adjustments and updates and whatever.
So I think I can sum up the user experience of the Antlib config tool very simply. The UI was designed by a programmer.
Yes. But again, the thing is that...
And that says a lot.
Yeah, it was designed by the programmer. And it was stuck like that for a number of releases, pretty much since what, V1,
since V1,
the UI hasn't changed. So you can still see the same hierarchical tree. And the thing is, if you actually learned it and kind of got your head around it, it's actually not that challenging to go about making your typical changes and config jobs. However, what we were finding from some anecdotal evidence and when we talk to people at the conferences or when they come for the workshops is that it's not very intuitive to go and learn how to configure different tasks for new people as well as for people who are not developers but in the IT ops and administration jobs.
And I was going to say, one thing we could do probably for the viewers is maybe do a walkthrough of the config tool. Once you get to that point, I know you guys are in early iterations right now, maybe you can do a walkthrough so people can see what the new one is going to look like, well ahead of time, if you will.
Oh, yeah. So let me tell you what we're doing there.
Sure.
So first of all, this is the first time the Antlib engaged seasoned usability experts, like user experience designers. So we're partnering with several people here, and we're taken this extremely seriously. And one of the first things that we've discussed and realized that we cannot really go about improving anything till we actually have some sort of a usability baseline. So last week, what we did at TechEd, we've done this whole week-long series of studies specifically to establish the usability baseline and to get some hard metrics that will allow us to later on, once the new config tool experience is designed,
nice.
To actually go and test and compare and say, yes, we actually achieved some improvement. So
great.
Usability testing is done now in terms of data collection. The analysis is going on. We're also doing in parallel user research, so that involves a series of interviews with people who've been using Antlib for some time now. And after this, what we're going to have, the new experience designed at the conceptual level as wireframes. So we're going to have these wireframe prototypes that we're going to review internally, we're going to review with the advisory council members, and we're going to review it with the public as well. We're going to have another round of specifically usability testing, but this time not on the config tool, like the software, but at the level of the prototype. Because we don't want to build something that may end up rendering no improvement whatsoever. It's expensive to do that.
Right.
So, and then the last piece, of course, would be once we kind of zero on the prototype that we like, because again, we're going to have several of them to choose from. We're going to go about, discussing the feasibility of implementing it, and then we'll choose the technology right? So.
Yeah. Just a note of clarification. We're talking paper prototypes here.
Right.
Software prototypes.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Right. No, makes sense. So you talked about quite a bit of things that's going on in EL5. Pretty exciting, right? The architect, the refactoring work, probably not visible to a lot of the users, rightly so. They should not see the impact of that, even though it's the right thing to do. Whereas on the configuration aspect, the tool, people will see the benefit. The users will see the benefit of it, right? So tons of good improvements going on. For the folks who are using Enterprise Library, they'll see it. They'll see the difference, and hopefully it's for the good, right? On the other end, for somebody who's actually using it maybe for the first time or haven't used Enterprise Library, what's going on? I mean, are we going to help them get on Enterprise Library? What's the story there?
Absolutely. So learnability fits within this bigger picture of the simplicity for the win, as we call it. And right now, the set of documentation for Antlib is over 1,000 pages. And we tried to kind of address this entry barrier for people who are new to Antlib. Again, they may be experienced developers, but they may be looking at Antlib first time with a bunch of webcasts and presentations and hands-on labs, particularly hands-on labs that we just released a fresh new set of hands-on labs for Antlib 4.1 and Unity 1.2 about, 2-3 months ago, which, again,
well received.
We highly encourage people to go and get their intro to Antlib with those. Nevertheless, there's still this kind of gap. And what we decided to do is that we actually need some sort of a small book, what we call the developer notes, and the idea is to give a very quick overview and a summary of maybe key scenarios, key tasks that developers may want to do with Antlib, so that they can quickly learn some of the most common approaches or figure out that maybe Antlib is not the right thing for them.
Gotcha.
Okay, so we came up with this idea of developer notes, which we already prototyped. So we're doing the same way as we're doing code. We're going to have many iterations.
Nice.
And we've already released it for testing, learnability testing in this case.
And I see you've got a copy in front of you.
Chapters.
Oh, nice.
Yes, it's available online.
Okay.
And we are soliciting and inviting people feedback on that.
Super.
So, and the key there is to make documentation way more approachable, maybe even fun to read. And that could be for somebody who is on the plane and wants to get their intro to Antlib, fairly quickly. And you don't need to necessarily oversee a flight.
So now I'll finally have an Antlib document that I can read to my kids.
Actually, I don't know about your kids. maybe those who can understand some adult humor. But anyway,
if the goal is to get your kids to go to sleep.
Okay. Oh, you know what? Maybe that's what I need. That's exactly what I need.
That's what the main Antlib docs are for.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the 1,000 pages. You can easily use it as a lullaby.
Perfect. You mentioned that it's available online. So a couple of call outs for the URL. You can go to msdn.com/Antlib. ENTLIB, correct. Or you can go to our CodePlex project site, which is where you're engaging with the community, which is codeplex.com/entlib again, right?
Same thing.
So the book itself, or I shouldn't say the book, the developer notes, the two chapters, the prototype, as you called it, it's available as a soft copy online at codeplex.com/entlib.
And the new chapters are coming up too.
Perfect. And there's a feedback survey or a feedback survey that you put out there that the users can fill in. And they can also check out the product backlog for Enterprise Library.
So let me just say one thing about the product backlog, because today we only talked about the simplicity story and this user experience. But it doesn't mean that that's all that you're going to see in Enterprise.
Right.
We have over 100 stories,
nice.
In particular, you know, features and providers. And you'll see, again, some of them are fairly small, others are larger, big, and maybe we'll have a different... webcast on other features as we actually tackle them in our incremental way. Because again, for now we've been addressing the ARC 01 and the usability stories head on. So
perfect.
You can see the backlog.
Well, I'll take you up on that offer, and we'll do a couple of more. One to walk through the config tool,
sure.
And then also kind of walk through some of the features in the backlog as you finish it up. You know, as you go through the future iterations. With that, well, thank you so much. You know, Chris and Grigori, it's been fantastic. And thanks, everyone. That's the end of the video.
Partners in